Hey, this is JW Richard with NTX underscore beer. So you're listening to episode 118, and we had a few audio issues with this episode, so we tried to get as much of that out as we could, but we do want to apologize in advance if that kind of messes up your listening pleasure during the show. But we are excited to bring this episode to you, and we're going to kick it off right now. Modern Brews and Beats, episode 118. Episode 118 of Modern Brews and Beats podcast. I'm JW Richard with NTX underscore beer. And with me is my co-host Tony Dunn out of Arkansas, although right now he's in a different spot. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm good. I'm over here in Mesquite, Texas today, Jerry.
Good old Mesquite.
There's no trees. So that's probably why my allergies are jacked up, dude.
Wait, no trees and your allergies are jacked up because there's no trees?
Yeah, man. I think now that I am a true Arkansan, the trees help me breathe. They filter in all that nasty city, you know, city pollution. And now that I'm here, ain't no damn trees.
Are there a lot of cedar trees where you are in Arkansas?
There are some, yes. Okay. But I seem like my allergy. Maybe I just changed, Jerry. My medicine now works, and I am adapted. You know, to the Ozarks.
A wonderful change has come over me. I understand. Arkansas has done that for you, but yeah, I know. I think here in Texas, I think because of the trees and the, you know, everything having sex, allergies start kind of going like, whoa, this is a lot. So yeah, I get it. You got a 118 reference for us?
Just so my 118 reference today was. Back when I used to be a nerd, Jerry, which is a very short period in my life, I used to be a fan of my chemistry class in high school. Mm-hmm. One, I think I had a crush on the teacher. I don't really remember. But I was really good at the periodic table. And there are 118 elements on the periodic table. So there's my 118 reference for tonight.
We'll take it.
Can you name an element, Jerry?
Oxygen.
On the periodic table. Yeah, this one. Okay. Not bad.
Not bad. It's an element, right? I mean,
he took the obvious one, but hey, that works.
I mean, you just name an element. You didn't say the name of like a lesser known element or something.
Hey, you're totally right, man. Totally right.
See, it's your question, see? You're trying to catch me off guard.
Tried.
Too funny. Well, so we have a special guest tonight, and we actually are kicking off our segment that we actually started in last year called A Seat at the Table. And this is really a seat at the Brewmaster's Table because we're following along chapters in The Brewmaster's Table by Garrett Oliver. And we have Collins Reed with us from Funky Picnic Brewery and Cafe. That's the full name, right? I always just think Funky Picnic, but it's Funky Picnic Brewery and Cafe, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Trying to highlight that food element that we provide as well.
Awesome. We'll get into show 118. So now we're going to get into our brews of the week. Colin, you are our guest. Let us know what kind of brews you've been enjoying for the week.
Yeah. So like I said, my wife and I, we always pick out a special beer to open on our wedding anniversary each year. We actually went to Belgium on our honeymoon, but we've kind of gone through all those beers we had left over from that trip. So we went to Jester King, I think it's probably within the last year or so, and picked up a few of their Modern Dansk, which is a kind of a cherry wild beer, and it's actually made with cherry juice from a Danish winery. So we have about, I think, four or five of those that we've been sitting on for a little bit, so we're going to open each one of those every year on our anniversary and kind of see how that kind of matures in the bottle.
That sounds great.
And whatnot. Yeah.
That sounds delicious. Cool. Tony, what you got?
So this is going to be an interesting brew of the week, Jerry, because I'm going to defer to you because I was actually with you when I had my beer of the week. But I will highlight one of them.
Okay.
The one that I was impressed with the most. Jerry, you know, I am not a stout guy. I'm trying. Colin, I'm trying. I'm trying hard, man. So I was able to try a 2016 cherry chocolate double brown stout, and Jared, that was from Is that Deep Ellum?
Deep Ellum, yes.
And that was originally made from, at the time, Barrett Tillman, was that right?
Yeah, that's when Barrett was working.
There we go, time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jerry. I went to sleep with a smile on my face last night after drinking that. And it wasn't because I was feeling good. Uh-huh. I was a little high with the medication, but Jerry, it tasted so good. I was just dreaming of just sipping slow. So yes, that is my brew of the week. But the rest of them, Jerry, I was with you, man. So what are your brews of the week, my man?
Lichtenhainers are a favorite of mine. I do like smoked beers. And like the one that Victor made recently, the Moon Smoke, was really good. We talked about it on episode 104 when we were talking to Victor Brewing. But my first taste of Lichtenhainer came from Barrett Tillman with Black Man Brewing. And his collaboration with Cedar Creek called Smoking Lit kind of gave me a new experience with smoked and slightly sour beers. And recently we had an opportunity to try different beer, comparing the one that Barrett made with 35 Brewery in Costa Rica, which won a lot of awards in Costa Rica and Panama, and his version made here.
And this is where we ran into a little bit of a snag. This is where our guest, Colin Sri, mentions that his beats for the week include the new Bastards of Soul project.
Got on my radar, and they just released a new album called Corners, so I've been kind of listening to a few tracks here and there on YouTube, but we'll probably go out and get the album here probably sometime this week or next.
Yeah. Yeah. Rest in peace, Chad Murray. I remember Chadwick Murray from the band Murr, and it was just so sad out of the blue. I mean, He just had his baby and never even got a chance to see the child. And so that was, that's rough. And that's gotta be rough for the band, cause I don't know exactly where it's going to go on with the band. And I think they had enough material for a third album, but it's like, wow, what do you do with that? You know, So yeah, I look forward to hearing that. I definitely look forward to hearing that record. So, Tony, what you been listening to?
Yeah, so I was listening to Blood Orange, one of my recent favorite. I don't want to say their favorite, but I really enjoy Blood Orange. But I was listening to their Angel Pulse album. Mm-hmm. I believe that was 2019. Is that sounds about right, 2019. Dude, I love the track Gold Teeth. Reason why, because Project Pat is on there. Him and the great Gangster Boo. Yeah. And Jerry, you know, I love my Memphis rappers.
Absolutely.
And Project Pat is rapping his ass off on there. So I wanted to dive back in deep to some old Project Pat. Mm-hmm. So I went back in the day to 1999 to listen to Geddy Green and my favorite album, Mr. Don't Blake, in 2001. So I've been on this Memphis 3-6 Mafia Project Pat thing for the past week, which normally gets me like motivated and upbeat and everything, but with this little head cold I got, complete opposite. So I want I feel like I'm antsy in my toes, but the rest of my body's like, nah,
I ain't feeling it.
Nah, man, just sit here.
So, just chill. Yeah, just chill with it. Grab something to drink and chill with it. No, I get
exactly.
It's funny this week. So you've been kind of going back into some things. I've been going back into the band that I've spoken about on the podcast a lot from Charleston, South Carolina, called Little Bird. And Little Bird,
I love them.
Because I really think I enjoy their sound. The EP Gamma, like in 2021, they like dropped three EPs, right? Alpha, Beta, and Gamma. And the great thing about that is that it's all going to be on one vinyl set once they release that vinyl set. And I'm looking forward to actually purchasing that. They kind of give you, for people who haven't heard Little Bird, think of like some of the alternative production of Unknown Mortal Orchestra and take some of their pop sensibilities with add a little bit of Maroon 5 sensibilities in that. And there was another group I was thinking about too that almost you have a little touch of their sound. But yeah, I mean, Little Bird, I think, makes some really good stuff. So yes, their EP Gamma, and I look forward to getting the vinyl when it drops. So
I like how you threw that Maroon 5 in there. That actually had me thinking like old Maroon 5.
I can kind of hear that. Yeah. And there was another band too that is sort of their old sound, like old Tame Impala, like before.
Yeah.
So I can hear a little bit of that production sound in Little Bird. And I'm like going, okay, I like it. But the vocals to me kind of go along the line of Ruben from Unknown Mortal Orchestra, because they're not as high pitched as like Adam Levine's and stuff like that, but you kind of have just a different sound. And yeah, I dig it. It's I think they call it like progressive pop or progressive rock. I don't know. I like the stuff. It's good.
It's a good vibe. And Colin, I think you would really enjoy them, because dude, they're really good. Jerry introduced me to them maybe a year ago, if that. But yeah, okay. I dig them. I dig them a lot.
I hope they are as good in concert. They've not been in DFW as far as I've seen, but I hope they're as good in concert, because if they are, that'll be a band to watch.
Hell yeah. Give me some of them old Maroon 5 vibes, man. I'm
You know you want some Sunday morning. You know you want it. Yeah, you know? So, so again, tonight, this is an episode that we're going to do a segment of A Seat at the Table. And we are following along in the Brewmaster's Table. This is Chapter 3, Principles of Matching Beer with Food. One of the things I love about the book is, one, I just love Garrett Oliver's writing. I could be sitting there and I had just had a full meal, and I can read about how he prepares his meals and I'm hungry again. So it's amazing how he puts his things in there. And he talks about how wine enthusiasts will talk about food being somewhat some tricky ingredients such as eggs and ginger and certain cheeses and tomatoes and stuff like that. But beer can fit with all of those things. And one of the reasons why we wanted to have Colin here is because Colin's been doing a fantastic job with these beer dinners at Funky Picnic. So we kind of want to get into your head, Colin, and find out what's going on with these beer dinners. But even before that, how did you get started with making beer? You know, kind of give us the synopsis.
Yeah, it goes a little ways back. I went to college down in Austin, just as kind of their brew revolution was kind of emerging there, with a lot of their brewing kind of starting to grow outside of, you know, Live Oak and a few of the older breweries down there. Actually, Live Oak was my first brewery tour ever, I think it might have been 2009, back at the old location too. Nice. Where it was just you had to duck to get into the production space, just because it was practically a warehouse with a low ceiling. But yeah, had a few friends, and actually even my pastor down there was a home brewer. So kind of caught the bug down there, and literally the day before moving back to Dallas, I went to Austin Homebrew Supply, got my starter kit, and moved back to Dallas and started brewing there. Was homebrewing just by myself for a while, and was actually playing Winter League Ultimate Frisbee, and was just put on kind of a random team and met some of the people there, and met Samantha, who's actually my business partner now, but didn't know her at the time. And she's like, hey, I've got two friends starting to homebrew. Maybe the four of us should get together and start brewing. And actually, one of those two people actually was a friend actually I had from high school that moved out to Fort Worth. So the four of us started brewing together and started doing a lot of the local competitions. We did Martin House's Riverside Shootout that we actually, I think we won once, runner up once, and then top 10, I think a few times. So we got to actually brew with Martin House, and then we did a Brew Riot down in Bishop Arts District. Did that a few times, actually won it two consecutive years. And then on the very last year that it happened, we were actually runners up. But you can actually still go to Eno's up on the second floor and see our team pictures still up there.
That's awesome. That's nice. That's wild.
Yeah, from there, we were trying to figure out, do we actually want to try to make this a business or whatnot? So I was actually still getting my MBA at UT Dallas. So the idea was kind of always in the back of my mind. And Samantha kind of wanted to get out of the corporate world and kind of run more of the day-to-day stuff. And our two other friends actually eventually had a kid and actually moved to Colorado. So they're not as involved with the project as much. But essentially, Sam and I sat down, kind of hammered out a business plan, changed it a couple dozen times, and started seeking out investors, which ended up mostly being kind of friends and family. And then eventually found our spot in the South Main Village part of Fort Worth. It used to be a furniture warehouse. It was kind of a blank canvas for us to kind of build out our brewery and our kitchen, and opened in late June of 2019, just in time for the pandemic to come in just a few months later.
Well, at least you opened it. So when you opened, like, Beer to Go was about to come in September of 2019, which I think that's been a huge thing for breweries to have here in Texas. I mean, the fact that that came just 6 months before this whole thing, 6 to 8 months before the whole thing kind of fell down.
Yeah, well, actually, we have a brew pub license, so we were actually able to do Beer to Go from the start.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Yep.
So, yeah, so that was actually always part of our plan. So we just, we bought a Crowler Seamer from the get-go. And actually, I think the first month of the pandemic, though, we outsold all the Beer to Go we had done the prior 6 months. So
a little quick tidbit. I used to work literally around the corner from Funky Picnic off of, like, Jennings and was it Rosedale, not too far from you guys. And I remember that area before it got developed. Man, that whole area has transformed. And I left right after you guys opened that my job. I was so mad at myself. I was like, oh, now y'all come over here. So I had to go make some more money, but it's all good. But yeah, I love that whole area, how it's developed and everything. And especially you guys, huge fan.
Thanks.
Very cool. So when was your first beer dinner there?
Yeah, so our first beer dinner was probably that following September of 2019, because we essentially, the way we do it is we do one a month, and then about every other one we'll actually bring in a guest chef. So I think actually the first one we did was actually with Stefan Rochelle of Wishbone and Flint, who's actually a restaurant that's kind of across the street from us. They weren't quite open yet, but he was kind of wanting to get his name out there. So he collaborated on a lot of the food dishes with our kitchen team. And one of the unique things that we like to do is actually brew a unique beer to release on that beer dinner. And if we have an outside chef coming in, we usually let them collaborate. So I believe with that first beer, we did, I think it was a Brett IPA, which is also the first kind of funky or wild beer we had done for Funky Picnic as well. Usually we do about five courses, and we pair a different Funky Picnic beer with each one. One is, you know, being that unique one for that event, and then we try to mix it up a little bit. We're not doing the same beers kind of over and over. It took a little while to catch on. Those first couple ones were a lot of just kind of friends and family. But now I believe the last four we've done have all sold out before the night of the event. So they've definitely caught on in popularity. You know, a few people that are kind of regulars that are at almost every beer dinner. Actually, we have one guy who's actually literally been to every single one. Shout out to Gary Melton, if you're listening. Really the menus we actually kind of come up with on our own and just see how people react, just how quickly we sell out. We try to make them unique and different. Actually, the one we have coming up at the end of the month is actually our very first vegan beer dinner. So we usually try to do things that are a little bit different. We actually did an Oktoberfest one back in, I think it was late September of last year. So we usually try to do them pretty seasonal. We usually do kind of a harvest one in the fall. We actually did an all seafood one back in January. There's a new kind of Mexican seafood restaurant called La Onda with Chef Victor Villarreal. And once again, he was on the verge of opening, or maybe had just opened by the time we did the dinner. And kind of allowed him to highlight, you know, his new space. And since he specialized in seafood, we wanted him to come in and kind of help our kitchen team kind of bring in some specialty fish. I think there's certain fishes, like he actually likes to fly in from Hawaii and whatnot. So lending his expertise to kind of our kitchen staff and allow them to get creative and grow outside of just making the same entrees that we serve day in, day out. So it kind of gives our kitchen team ability to kind of stretch and use their creativity for these events as well.
That is fantastic. So it's interesting you're doing a vegan dinner, because I was going to ask, you know, a lot of the things that are talked about in the book, as well as with other beer dinners I've seen, you have a lot of people pairing with cheeses and meats, but I know not everyone's into cheese and meat. So that's really cool that you're doing vegan. Is it like vegan? Is it all vegetables or, you know, meat substitutes? Just curious about that.
Yeah, I've actually got the menu pulled up in front of me. Yeah, it's mostly vegetables. Yeah, no vegan bacon or anything like that. Everything is vegetable based. Actually, the dessert is very fruit heavy, but using a lot of different kind of herbs and spices to add flavor to it as well.
So walk us through a dinner. Walk us through what these courses would look like if I were, you know, maybe one that you've recently had.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, I'll actually walk us through the menu for our upcoming vegan beer dinner. Actually, it is sold out, but we are doing a dessert-focused beer dinner at the end of April. So keep an eye out for that menu. But usually what I like to do, since this kind of allows our kitchen to be creative, I actually let them kind of come up with the food menu and then just work with some of our beers. Just to allow them, because this allows them to be more creative as well. And since we have a wide variety of beers, we typically have something that will fit any kind of dish. And we actually design a lot of our beers to pair really well with food. So just kind of walking through the menu. Our first course is a sweet potato crostini with roasted grapes and jalapeno. One of the tenets kind of from Garrett Oliver's Brewmaster's Table is match intensity, but you also want to work, you know, kind of lighter dishes, lighter beers, and kind of work more towards kind of heavier dishes, heavier, more intense beers. So usually we like to start that first course off with something lighter. So that usually ends up either being our La Raza Mexican Kolsch or Mexican Lager or our Vibes Kolsch, since those are two of the lighter beers we offer. So with this one, since you do kind of have the jalapeno in there, it's a little bit more flavorful. So the Vibes can have a little bit more bitterness than, say, our Mexican Lager would. With that first course, we're pairing it with the Vibes Kolsch.
Nice.
Just the first one in itself sounds amazing. So especially the jalapeno part. I'm thinking about anything to open up my sinuses right now.
So then second course is a mushroom ragu with creamy polenta. What I like to do is when I'm kind of figuring out what we want to pair it with, I kind of like to take the dish and kind of break it down into its elements. So kind of mushroom ragu, mushrooms are very dark, earthy, and then creamy polenta. You kind of have, you know, a little bit of saltiness there, a bit creaminess. So kind of the first thing that comes to mind for me, and since St. Patrick's Day is just around the corner, we're also making a dry Irish stout. So that was actually an easy pairing, just because you have that kind of that earthy herbal bitterness with the kind of the English hops in there. But then since it is a dry Irish stout, that kind of dark roast and earthiness goes really well with mushroom. The third course is a roasted radish with mint miso vegan yogurt and pistachios. This one was a little bit tricky. There's a lot going on in there. You know, radish and mint and miso, you're getting a lot of kind of umami and earthiness, and you know, a little bit of spice also from that mint and also with the pistachios. But that yogurt, you know, is going to be a little bit tart. So what I kind of went there is we have a hazy IPA, and the names are a little bit out there, but that's half the fun. Is the hazy IPA is called But What of the Proletariat Cameron? And it was probably some conversation our brewer Harper had with our cellarman Cameron. Just sounded funny, and it became a beer name.
Hey, that's awesome. Love the creativity.
Yeah. So with that kind of pairing, you know, with it being a hazy IPA, you get a lot of that, you know, hop flavor and hop character, but not necessarily the bitterness. I think anything that's too bitter is going to overwhelm a lot of those more delicate flavors. But since it is a little bit more juicy, you know, there's almost a little bit of tartness in there. So kind of marrying up that tartness of the beer with a little bit of tartness in the yogurt. But neither of those dishes are, you know, overly intense, and they're not going to clash, or one's not going to cover up the other. So kind of that rule of matching intensity kind of comes into play there.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that the tartness would be. Like, I'm trying to picture these flavors in my mouth as my sinuses are like going crazy, but but that sounds interesting, pairing that with that yogurt. So I'm very intrigued. And that's just number three, correct?
yeah. So this is a five course meal. And actually, one of the more unique things too we do with our beer dinner is for each course, I'll go up and I'll talk about, you know, kind of what we're doing right now, how we kind of came up with the pairing, what flavors go well with what. And then our brewer will actually come up too and kind of talk about the beer, you know, what malts and hops he decided to use, why he chose those, where the name came from, So we make it a very interactive beer dinner. So for each course, you know, I'm up there talking, our brewer's talking. Usually our chef will come out and either do something at the beginning or maybe more towards the end. And we all, you know, we prompt everyone, you know, if they have any questions. So it's a very, very interactive beer dinner. Yeah. So then the main course is balsamic beet and pearl onions with celery root puree and micro beet sprouts. So
that already sounds amazing.
Yeah, so, I'm sitting here like, man, you're making me hungry. I love it.
So this is actually the one that we paired with our unique beer, and Harper went all out on this one. So it's actually going to be a pea flower cream ale with jalapeno. So pea flower is, you know,
I'm there. Dude. That sounds good. You got me on the cream ale. Then you throw the jalapeno in there. I'm sold.
Yeah. So, and then pea flower is, I guess it's, it's technically the flower of the plant, but it's kind of that purpley pink color. And actually, depending on the acidity, determines kind of the final color of it. So it's a very, very colorful beer. And then also, you know, kind of the main course, you know, you have beets and pearl onions and the micro beet sprouts. It's a very colorful dish. So we wanted a very colorful beer to go with it. And then having the cream ale with, you know, there's kind of the corn note to it. And also with the jalapeno in there, a lot of herbalness in there. So it's going to be a very flavorful beer, but you have a lot of those similar flavors in the course as well.
And did you say the name of that beer?
You know what? I'm not sure if we have a name for that one yet or not. We actually have a running Slack channel of beer names. And there's, I mean, we probably have a couple hundred on there. And
you guys have some of the most inventive beer names.
They're very unique. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, like.
That's why I was wondering, like, what is this one called?
Yeah.
You know, he came in a Hyundai and left in a Honda. You know, there's like one, like, wow.
Yeah.
That's a whole story there.
You know? Yeah. But that's half the fun. And usually if Harper has his way, it's usually named after a mid-lake song or some random lyric from them.
Hilarious.
So. Yeah, and then the final dessert course is a lemon tart with candied orange peel and lavender syrup. So, you know, lemon tart, orange peel, you have a lot of citrus in there. Mm-hmm. But you do have, you know, that kind of the herbalness of that lavender syrup in there as well. So we actually just rebrewed this beer, I think, last week. It's called Hollywood Cole, but actually the original name was actually part of our The World Isn't Perfect, and Neither Is This Beer series, which is kind of our charity series.
Yes.
We actually brewed this, I'm trying to remember, I think it was earlier last year, but it's the base beer is actually, it's a ginger peach Brett Saison.
Ooh. Wow.
So, sounds delicious.
Yeah, so kind of pairing that, you know, the lemon tart with the orange peel kind of brings out kind of those fruity peach notes, but adding the ginger and even a little bit of earthiness kind of from the Brett kind of barnyard kind of leathery funk on there. Kind of really brings out the lavender in there as well. So it's kind of pairing kind of fruity with fruity, but then kind of herbal with herbal as well. So having those flavors kind of play off each other.
Now, question, these beers have already been brewed. So these beers are on tap room already?
All of them except for the pea flower cream ale. So we actually save that until the dinner. And then, but usually we actually do two kegs of that, so we don't go through two kegs worth during the dinner itself. So it usually goes on tap the next day.
And I was going to ask a similar question.
I'm sad now, but
I was going to ask if some of these one-off beers have eventually made it onto your regular draft menu. Like maybe you made this one-off beer and it worked so well, and people were so connected to it that you decided to go ahead and put it as part of your draft menu, at least part of your draft calendar.
Yeah, I'm trying to think I'm not sure if any of the beer dinner ones have, but there was a beer that we brewed fairly early on, and it was actually towards the beginning of the pandemic, but we called it What Is a Weekend, because essentially we were just working every day and, you know, trying to keep things afloat, especially during the pandemic. So sure. The joke was, well, what is a weekend? We're kind of working 24/7 here.
Absolutely.
But actually, our brewer Harper actually brewed it for his wife. We kind of call it a London Fog sour ale.
Because, right?
Yeah. Yes, so it's a kind of a sour amber brown ale with Earl Grey tea in it. So yeah, we brewed that, probably 2 years ago, but we actually just rebrewed it and put it on tap, I believe, last week.
I personally do love tea beers. You know, we have a lot of beers that are infused with coffee, but I don't see as many of them infused with tea. And I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I just think that there should be more tea beers. I think that should be its own thing.
Yeah, it's really depending on the tea, but yeah, tea can be a little bit more of a delicate flavor. I know Harbor had to use quite a bit to really get kind of that bergamot flavor out of the Earl Grey tea. But it's something that's easily measured. You know, it's not like, you know, like with fruit, you know, sometimes that might change the flavor profile if some of the sugars kind of ferment out. But with tea, you know, you're going to get what you're going to get. And it's a little bit easier to add in the secondary. It can be treated more or less like coffee. You know, you just steep it, or you can make a tincture and kind of, you know, add a little bit, try it. I don't think there's anything too difficult about adding it in there, but but there's also a large variety of teas. You know, which tea do you use? So I think there could be a little bit more experimentation with that.
I think I've tasted more local beers made with Earl Grey than I have with like any other tea. I mean, with exception like Small Brew Pub, rest in peace, Small Brew Pub. They actually did a Ruby Ruse tea.
Yeah, with their beer. Yeah, I've seen that one used a bit,
and I know that. Hop and Sting just recently did the Big Trouble in Little D, playing off of the Big Trouble in Little China with, I think, a green tea in their beer. So, all right, Jasmine. Is it Jasmine? I need to verify whether it's Jasmine Hops. Okay, I'll verify that. But basically, I know I've seen some people doing tea beer, and I just think it's really cool. Plus, what Cool in the Gang by Blue Owl, where they use Earl Grey and that sour that they did. So I just think it's kind of fun just to kind of bring tea into it.
Yeah,
I can't even think off the top of my head if I actually had a beer infused with tea. So that does sound really, really good.
I mean, if anything, that's one of the things we love about beer and making beer and how the brewer can get these particular flavors out of these things. So it's actually fascinating to hear you discuss the beer. And I know, if Harper, you know, talking about some different things, you know, bringing these flavors to bear. Of course, I want Harper to bring back a barley wine that we had at your anniversary. But Colin, I mean, I really appreciate you sharing just kind of what goes into making a beer dinner at your place, you know, the particular fingerprint that you have in the Metroplex.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I mean, got a lot of inspiration. Meddlesome Moth is probably one of my favorite DFW places. I don't think it's quite monthly, but every once in a while they'll do a few beer dinners. So got some inspiration from there. And I think Small Brew Pub did a few. Mm-hmm. And then Common Table, when it was still open in Uptown. I know they had the daily beer dinner, but I think they did some bigger ones too every once in a while.
So
it's now on my to-do list.
It definitely
I gotta get like the wifey something. We gotta come back for that. Absolutely.
Do you get a lot of craft beer novices that'll come to a beer dinner, or are they mainly the people who kind of are, you know, the palate is pretty open to craft and pretty aware of the flavors coming together? I'm just curious, who do you see at Funky Picnic coming to your beer dinners? Who does it attract?
Yeah, as far as kind of beer wise, we get a wide range, everywhere from, just craft beer enthusiasts. We usually have a handful of homebrewers at each one. But sometimes it's just people who are more in it for the food. I know it's interesting kind of being a restaurant with a brewery attached. We kind of have two different groups of people. We have some people that are there for the food and have beer, and then some people that are there for the beer and have food. So it's always an interesting kind of dichotomy of, who is attracted by what. Right. But yeah, I would say at least for the beer dinners, it's probably more on the beer side. I know Gary likes to come in and be the first person to check in on that special beer just made for the beer dinner. Nice. But especially I'm actually really curious to see who all shows up for the vegan beer dinner, since that's a different crowd that we typically see. We do have a few vegan items on our menu, but it's not the main draw. So I'm really curious to see see who comes out for this one.
That's really cool. Where can people follow the different beer dinners? Are they all listed at your website? Are they on your Facebook page? How do they do that?
Yeah, so for each one on Facebook, we create an event, so you can find it there. The actual ticket link is through a website called Ticket Tailor, T-A-I-L-O-R. But then we also put it on our event calendar, on our website. And then we'll usually, you know, dedicate one post on Instagram for it, but Instagram's not the best platform really to push events. But yeah, I would say mostly our website and Facebook are probably the best places to follow us for that.
Colin, thank you so much for being on our show tonight, and thank you for bringing the elements of Garrett Oliver's book, Brewmaster's Table, to life with what you're doing at Funky Picnic in Fort Worth. We'll be definitely putting all this information in the show notes so people will know exactly where to follow the website, Facebook, Instagram, and your Twitter. So yep. That way they can keep in touch with all of that.
All of them.
All of it. Hey, it's what you got to do. It's what you got to do. So that way for all the different breweries that are around, so you can see what's happening. Tony, where can people follow you when you're discussing your music? Now that baseball's back, I know you're excited about that. That right there will clean your sinuses. So where will you talk about your fun stuff?
Yeah, so follow me at Cool Tony D. That's KOOTONYD. I'm on Instagram taking the beer pictures. By the way, I may try to, by the time this episode airs, I may have already been to Funky Picnic. So may need to get out there before I dip back off to Arkansas. So, check me out on IG. I'm on Twitter. I am on Twitter bashing my Cowboys just because I want to. It makes me feel better.
I think lately a lot of people are bashing the Cowboys, but that's another conversation. Yes, go ahead.
Makes me feel better. I'm also on Spotify and SoundCloud. Check out my badass playlist under Cool Tony D as well. That's where I'm at. But Jerry, I always tell people, if you want to know what's going on, you got to follow Jerry. Where can they find you at?
So I am, doing beer pictures and beer information, and especially when Funky Picnic brews banjo, I definitely am out there. And I'm at NTX_beer. That's NTX_beer at Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. All the show notes that you hear from Modern Brews and Beats, you will find at ntxbeer.net. Please follow our handles for the podcast as well. So that's Modern Brews and Beats, all one word, all one phrase, at Instagram. It's M Brews Beats on Twitter. So just follow us there. That way you can find out what the new shows are. And especially after hearing this show, I know you want a ticket to that beer dinner in April, since the one in March is already sold out. But hey, get that April ticket.
I'm gonna mess around. Come back down here, man.
Bring your people.
Yeah. See you there.
Bring your people. So we definitely thank you for listening to episode 118 of Modern Brews and Beats. And like we say every week, enjoy the music and brews that you love, but please do not drive drunk. Please call a cab, Lyft, Uber, a friend, or be a friend if someone needs to get home safe. Thank you for listening to Modern Brews.